You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. And you, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. How are you two?
Not too bad, yeah. Sun's shining, so that's not bad. It's warming up, which is good. So
it is. It's a bit breezy, but it is warming up definitely, isn't it?
I've packed my long johns away for the foreseeable future.
Have you really? Well, I've still got my fluffy bedding on just in case. You know, me teddy bear bedding, that was quite popular this winter.
All right. Yes, anyway, moving on swiftly. what have you been up to? What have you been up to, Stephen?
I have just been catching up with stuff for my YouTube channel. I've had a lot of things planned, but obviously because of COVID, everything's been on hold. So now that things are starting to move again, I'm suddenly realizing that I've got all these interviews and things set up. So I'm just trying to work my diary out at the moment for that.
Yes, it's quite a lot of stuff going on now. Isn't there? Sorry, Sue.
And I'm just thinking, Stephen, that must take, that you've got to be really well sort of planned ahead for that, for your YouTube channel. You must have to really get those interviews planned in advance. Is that true?
Yeah, and because, Sue, they're such, because obviously I talk about HIV, but I also talk about people living with other conditions and people who've had, really interesting lives. So it kind of goes all over. So it's never really, it's never one theme. So it's, I'm never sure where I'm going to be one week to the next.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose that makes it more interesting, doesn't it? Yeah. What you do. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you, Sue? Have you been up to?
No, I've just been really quite busy with work and sort of planning, going out face to face, talking to people now, which is a bit scary actually. As much as I'm excited about it, but getting lots of requests in with my work to come and do a face to face talk and excited, but oh gosh, I'm sure everything's going to be fine, but that's how we've accustomed ourselves over the last year, doing something different than we're trying to revert back to what we used to do. But and yourself, Josh?
Yeah, I've just been working for Reverb and doing lots of scheduling and just as you said, trying to get back into normality and doing things. I'll just say the track we started with was Respect by Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great track.
Classic. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So what's on the show?
We've got some as ever, we say that every single week, and but the thing is, it is right, we have some great interviews again, don't we? Got a great interview with Lou from the Sussex Beacon. She runs the women's group and had a really nice interview with her. And things are starting to open, and she's explaining how they're gradually doing now at the Sussex Beacon, and so that's really interesting. And yourself?
Yeah, that's good. Same thing. I think we kind of chatted about just maybe getting the information out about organisations around Brighton, isn't it? So mm-hmm. I interviewed Michael Brimicombe, who is the welfare rights coordinator, so for Terence Higgins Trust. Mm-hmm. So he's just talking about his role at Terence Higgins Trust, and mm-hmm. also Harry Hillary, who set up an Instagram page called AIDS, Brighton AIDS Memorial. So that's quite an interesting chat. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not doing an interview this week, but I am talking about Patrick O'Connell. Now, not everybody might, the name might not ring a bell to everybody straight away, but something that will ring a bell is the Red Ribbon. And Patrick was the man who was behind the Red Ribbon. Unfortunately, we lost Patrick last week. He passed away. But, you know, he's left behind him this amazing, just the story of what he did and how he did it. And it's just, it's really amazing. So I was just going to kind of tell people about Patrick and about what he did with his life.
I'm just saying I did read about him, I'd heard about him, but I when I sort of read some more information about it, it was wow, you know, what he did and what he contributed, you know, over decade, was it quite a few years, wasn't it?
Yeah, do you want me to tell you a bit more about him?
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
So Patrick was he was a New Yorker, and he was living with HIV for 40 years of his life, and he was there in the 80s, you know. So obviously he was he said that he rented a black funeral suit for the first few years that he was in New York, and then he decided that he had to buy one because he was using it so often. So as an artist, he, you know, just saw so many of his friends and his community just being ravaged by AIDS, you know, and so many people, so many talented people. And in 1991, Patrick decided he had to do something. You know, he was like, I can't do nothing. You know, as an artist, he thought I need to use my craft to show people and make them aware. And what he did with a group of friends, he set up a project called Visual AIDS, and the people that were involved in this project sat there and cut all these ribbons, thousands upon thousands of them, because what Patrick's idea was to send these red ribbons to the Minskoff Theatre, which is where the Tony Awards is on. And if you guys are like me, I set up every year and watch the Tonys till 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and see who's doing what in musical theatre in New York. And Patrick sent all these red ribbons, these thousands of red ribbons, and he included a notice saying, please wear these red ribbons on stage, because we need to be public. We need people to see that AIDS is something that needs to be talked about, because in 1991, Reagan still hadn't spoken about it. So he just said, he just felt something needed to be said, something needed to be visual, you know. And I remember watching the Tonys that year and was blown away, you know, seeing the likes of Jeremy Irons and Elizabeth Taylor and those kind of big stars, you know, coming on stage and with a red ribbon on their lapels, you know. And he wanted the ribbon to be red because he wanted it to signify blood, you know, that HIV was in the blood, and it was also about red being vibrant and passionate, you know. So so every year on December 1st for World AIDS Day, you know, so many of us wear the red ribbon, and Patrick is the man that was behind that. And I just think, despite the fact that we've lost him, it's such an amazing story to leave behind. And despite the sadness, there's also something to be amazingly proud of.
It's now, it's iconic.
Iconic
image, isn't it? That, the red ribbon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to, you know, this December 1st, just when I look at my red ribbon, There'll just be an amazing realization of exactly what it stands for, you know, because I always knew what it stood for, but now knowing Patrick's story, it makes it even more special and even more important.
Yeah, same here, actually. I didn't know about Patrick, so yeah, that's amazing. Amazing person.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour. I'm with Harry Hillary, who's come on the show. How are you doing, Harry?
I'm very well, thank you. The sun is shining, so it's not so bad, is it?
Yeah, so you've been all right in the last year?
Yeah, not too bad. I've been blessed, actually. I had a job I could continue at home, and I've got a garden and a dog, so I'm very lucky to have those things. The people I'm most worried about are the people who've been isolating, maybe in a, you know, one bed flat somewhere and haven't been able to get out. I think that's been really difficult, but I've been quite blessed and lucky.
Yeah, and also with having a pet as well, we've done a bit of a story about that a few weeks ago about having pets, how important that is. So yeah, having dogs and cats and stuff is really important for mental health, isn't it?
I think it's really important. I think my dog has, you know, literally changed my life since I've had him, and I think during lockdown it's been a much easier experience thanks to him. So I'm very blessed, yeah.
Yeah, great. So we're going to talk about your new project, which is Brighton AIDS Memorial. Can you let our listeners know?
Yeah, basically it's an Instagram page. That's the starting point, called Brighton AIDS Memorial, that you can find. And what it's trying to do is kind of capture the stories behind the names of people who died from AIDS in the Brighton area. Like many, I go to the World AIDS Day vigil on World AIDS Day and, you know, listen out for the names of people I knew. But I just thought one day it was a shame that that's all there is left, just a name that's linked to that disease and death. And I thought actually it was only right to kind of give essence to those people and actually give a backstory, because they all burn brightly, they all had loves and dreams and aspirations, but all we know about them now is that link to horrible disease and death. So that's where the idea came from. And one particular World AIDS Day, I remember listening out for the name of my friend Andrea, and I heard lots of other names that of people I knew, Graham, Kevin, Ken, all these people. And I thought it would be good to try and capture something about them so that their essence was preserved as a memorial and remembrance of the disease. So that's kind of how it started. So the Brighton AIDS Memorial is the first step in that. And I hope in the future to link in with the Queer Heritage Archive that's just been established to maybe have a section there for the same thing. So basically, I started 2 weeks ago, but already there are, I think, 54 people have following the site, which is exceeding my expectations, because this has been purely word of mouth. And I've managed to capture the stories of 8 people so far, along with some other bits and pieces. So what I'm seeking, basically, is contributions from people who might go to the vigil or not, but have a loved one, a friend, an ex-lover, you know, whoever, who they want to remember. Ideally with a photograph, that would be nice, but it's not always necessary. And just a few lines about them, you know, what to capture their essence. You know, my friend Andrea, for example, was a really funny human being who, you know, never failed to make me laugh when we met him. We became very close friends because we lived opposite from each other. He was a florist and I had a cafe at the time in Garden Street. And, you know, I remember him as this kind of pint-sized dynamo from Brazil who was the life and soul of every party, that kind of was quite outrageous and had the most salacious stories you could ever imagine. That's the Andre I want to remember, not the one who was in Ward 6 slipping into a coma in 1991. I think it's important to remember a human being. So I'm seeking those kind of stories, really. It could be anything from an anecdote to, you know, something about the person, the essence of them, to capture so that going forward we have a fitting memorial for those people in the city.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. That's great, great stuff. So if people want to, how do people get involved? Through the Instagram?
Well, there's the Instagram has a kind of an intro section, and there's an email on there which I've created, which is brightonaidsmemorial@gmail.com.
Yeah.
So that's how to contact me. You know, it's a project I've started, but I want people to, you know, work with me to build it. So it's not ring fenced in any way. I'm happy for any contribution. But I just want it to build so that going forward, there is something there, you know, that in 100 years time or whatever, people can look back and capture the essence of these people and their stories. I mean, some of them are, you know, very moving and tragic. And I think programs like It's a Sin have touched on that, but yes. I don't think they've touched on it as well as they could be. And I personally like to kind of drill down into stories and get that sense of a human being, so that when you see that picture on Instagram, you can get a sense of who Andrea, Graham, Ken, or whoever was. So my page was directly influenced and inspired by the wonderful AIDS Memorial Instagram page, which is a global phenomena, really, which I get feeds from every day. And then the stories never cease to move me and, you know, remembering it's not all doom and gloom. It's actually a kind of a joyful, cathartic thing to actually remember those days and see the people as they were when they shone brightly. So that was the direct influence, the AIDS Memorial page, which I'd recommend any of your listeners to follow, of course, alongside the Brighton AIDS Memorial.
Yeah. These people, they're human beings, and they all had, you know, lives and dreams, and did great to hear that side of it. And as you said, just a name just doesn't tell the full story, does it? So
it doesn't. I think, you know, in this city, we've all been affected by the virus to varying degrees. And, you know, I was a volunteer years ago at the Sussex AIDS Centre and Helpline, And because of that, in the early 90s, 91, I think, was the worst year, I went to quite a lot of funerals. You know, I was a regular at Woodvale, which is where they all seem to take place. And, you know, those memories are often parked in a kind of dark space in my brain. But although releasing them is upsetting at times, it's also very cathartic and actually quite joyful at times to actually kind of remember the people when they were living and vibrant and wonderful. And there were some incredible people. Somebody I haven't mentioned yet is Father Marcus, who I remember meeting, I think in the Bulldog. It may have been with my friend Andrea, I don't know. And I had a preconceived notion of what Father Marcus would be. I imagined a man with a dog collar, you know, and all the rest of it. And I was deeply suspicious of religion at the time, still am to some degree. So I was already a bit hostile to the idea of Father Marcus. But when I was introduced to a man top to toe in leathers, you know, I got a very different impression. Yeah. And then after talking to him a bit and seeing what he did with Open Door, you know, I was absolutely blown away by his commitment, drive, ambition, love, all the things that you would hope religion would be. He personified. He was a wonderful man, who sadly himself died from AIDS in 1998. But his legacy lives on, because Open Door, although it dissolved sometime in the 2000s, the essence of it and the drive of it was picked up by, you know, the wonderful Lunch Positive that do still exist and still do amazing work. So what I want to also do with this thing is to try and link these things. You know, there's a pathway from the 90s to now that exists, and it's important that people new to the city, new to the disease, have a sense of the history and the background to it. So that's another reason for doing it.
Yeah, that's such a good idea, and yeah, really heartfelt stuff, isn't it? That's great stuff. Really happy you come on the show, and good luck with your project.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to come on again in the future if it's okay to plug it some more.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
If you've just tuned in, this is the HIVL on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. We're coming out of lockdown, so they say things are getting back to normal, hopefully. Well, we've got Lou from the Sussex Beacon. She runs the women's group there, and we're going to have a chat with Lou, just sort of telling you about the work she does at the Sussex Beacon, the changes that are possibly happening now we're sort of coming out of that 12, 13 month of lockdown. So welcome to the show, Lou. How are you today?
Hi Sue, thanks. I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. It looks like a sunny Brighton there. Is it sunny where you are? I'm in Worthing at the moment. Is it sunny Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton blue skies right now.
Oh, lovely. That gives us inspiration, isn't it? That the weather's going to get warmer and we're going to feel a bit better and people are going to start getting out a bit more. So, Lou, I know you've got a couple of roles in Brighton, and we're going to talk about the Sussex Beacon, and you run the women's group. So tell us a bit about the work you do at the Sussex Beacon, at the women's group.
Well, to introduce the Sussex Beacon, if people aren't sure, it's a specialist care and support unit for people living with HIV, and it covers all across Sussex. So we're based in Brighton and Hove. We're looking out over the Downs, we're looking out over Brighton and the sea, but it covers the whole of the Sussex region. So the Sussex Beacon has inpatient stays and treatment, so people who are poorly might stay there or recovering, but we also have a just as large outpatient services, so that might look like individual casework, or we run a huge amount of groups, one of which is the women's group, but I wouldn't want everyone to miss out on the exercise group or the mindfulness group or other day services we run. We also have the biggest peer mentoring scheme for people living with HIV in Sussex, but I specifically work on the women's group, which is a monthly health-focused group. For women, which is also a peer support space. We have external speakers in or activities.
So how, I mean, I know myself that so much they do at the Sussex Beacon, so much great support services they offer, and you know, it's just brilliant. And I've been in the Sussex Beacon and the views, I sometimes just go there for a coffee and look at the views. It's so beautiful, but they do so much there. So how long has the women's group been going? Do you know offhand?
So I think the women's group has been running for 10 years.
Whoa, really? Wow.
My knowledge, so the women's group exists under the Women and Family Services there, which is HIV support services for women and affected families. I think that's one of the very few dedicated women and families HIV services, maybe in the country, but I don't know.
No, that's absolutely fine. So, I mean, obviously, as you know, we're all aware that, you know, we've just gone through and possibly still going through the COVID pandemic. And there's been a lot of changes with everything, you know, with lots of local communities, charities, and we've had to sort of engage in things we've never done before. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never heard of Zoom 13 months ago. Well, I'd heard of it and ignored it, you know, but we were sort of pushed into things that challenged us. And I mean, how was it going when, I know things are starting to open up now, so how were you managing the women's group when we're in the depths of that pandemic?
Well, we still have, and during the, you know, more harsher periods of lockdown, have had a good presence for Zoom online groups. At the beginning, it was meeting weekly, and it even had these advantages where people who maybe we hadn't seen at the group for a long time were coming out of the woodwork. People were connecting from different geographies who might struggle to travel into the Sussex Beacon when we've had groups before. As we're running now, we've still been running in person as support groups that are allowed under COVID guidelines, but we also keep the Zoom online presence as well, so we alternate the groups every few weeks, doing one in person, one online, And it means that people with different needs or abilities can come or not come, or come online or come in person, for example. So trying to cater to this huge need that there is currently, but the different abilities to access that.
No, and that's great. And I think, you know, people say to me, oh, do you think we, you know, we've been doing Zoom and we've been doing online things. Do you think we'll forget about all of that? And when we get back to normal, I don't think so, because it's another way of connecting with the people, I think. And I think you've just said it yourself. You know, some people that can't get to the group, or some people, for whatever reason, feel better just perhaps zooming in, you know, to a call. And I think a lot of services, you know, are going to be delivering, yeah, okay, we're going to get back to face-to-face, but we've got that alternative now where we can reach people as well on a different level, would you not say?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly something that we're realising at the Sussex Beacon, that there is a need and an advantage of keeping online groups as well as in person, so it can be the balance.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you've got a great event coming up soon, haven't you, Lou, at the Sussex Beacon? Tell us about that.
So I'm really excited about our next group that's going to be happening next week on Monday, the 17th of May, which is a wellbeing day. So it is a full day, or 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. We have a group of women that are invited in. We're going to be doing some gentle yoga and mindfulness. I'm also a yoga and mindfulness teacher, so that's... convenient for our group.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We have a delicious home-cooked lunch. Maybe we'll even get to go out in the gorgeous gardens at Sussex Beacon if the weather is on our side. Mm-hmm. And it will also be a chance to have a peer support social group for people to chat and catch up. And all while that is going on, we also have complimentary massage therapists visiting us. So wow. Members of the group can book in for a slot for a massage.
Oh, as you're talking about that, I feel like booking in myself, actually. It seems very sort of, tempting. So, I mean, are the places still available, Lou? I mean, can people still contact you to see if there's any places, or are we all booked up on this one at the moment?
For this group, it's looking pretty full. We still have to have some social distancing, so we can't have as large groups as we might have had in 2019 or earlier back. But we are running events every 3 weeks. So even if you can't join us for this one, you know, the next one is there. So that's both the online offer and the in-person. Mm-hmm. And to give you an idea of other stuff that we do, often online we have external speakers come. So we have people that might talk about cervical cancer awareness and screening, and is also a great space for people with HIV to talk about the difficulties or specific needs they encounter with that. We have HIV consultants join us for a sort of ask me anything session. And the in-person groups, recent stuff we've done has been mindful drawing and writing. We've done thinking about self-care during lockdown. There are other creative activities, other sort of more practical activities. I like lots of crafting and creative
stuff. Yes, yeah.
It up so that there's lots of stuff for, you know, different interests. And I think something that's so valuable about the women's group is that idea of having a safe space where you can try something new. You know, you can do drawing without it being school or feeling stressed about it, because you're just in a friendly and facilitated space for it,
and not being judged by people. So what's that, you know, it's, you know, just and you know, I suppose in the space where you can just do anything and feel absolutely comfortable about in that safe space, you know? So I'm just thinking, so if anyone's tuning in or really interested, whether they can perhaps get in on the 17th or another meeting, what is the best contact details they could have for them to get some information or to contact you?
Well, the easiest place, if it works for people, is to go on the website, sussexbeacon.org.uk. Let me check that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. or Google the Sussex Beacon.
Yes.
Um, you'll be able to look through the different services that are offered on our website, including the Women and Families services. And you can always make a self-referral in, and either it can be scary to join new groups, and we're really aware of that at the Sussex mm-hmm. Beacon. So what we will always try and do if we get a referral to the women's group is myself or my colleague Hattie will directly get in touch to just introduce the group and introduce us as the facilitators, so people can feel a bit more confident when they arrive.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I know you're a very busy lady. You do so much in the community, and we are on the HIB. I want to thank you personally, actually, because we know you do some fantastic work with the women at the Sussex Beacon and the other work we haven't spoken about today. And perhaps you can come on again and talk about the other work you do in the community. That would be wonderful. Mm. Would you like to do that later on? Not the next week, you know, later on, because I know you're so busy at the moment.
I would love to come back on and speak to you again, Sue. It's been Brilliant. A pleasure. And thank you so much. It's a really rewarding part of my work to run the group.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Lou. We'll speak to you soon and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour. It's on 97.2 FM. I'm with Michael Brimicum, who is the Welfare Rights and Living Well Coordinator for Brighton Terence Higgins Trust in Ship Street. Did I get that right, Michael?
You did.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So how's the last year been for the service, for yourself?
Personally, it's been one of ups and downs, obviously isolation from working from home for the majority of the last year. Work-wise, again, it's had its ups and downs. Obviously, this COVID pandemic and the lockdown has affected everybody, including staff working within the DWP. So any claims for benefits have been taking longer to come through for decisions to be made, that is. So it's making the process longer for claimants. And also, they've not been sending out benefit award review forms. Yeah. So existing clients have still been getting their benefits. And they did extend benefit awards out to 2021 and 2022, which is great for the claimants. But it also meant that our workload tailed off quite significantly during the middle part of last year. Mm. And obviously, things are getting back to normal. And since December, I've been really busy again, which is great because it keeps my brain matter working.
Yes, yeah. And you come back into the office occasionally just to...
Yeah, obviously, I'm working from home. I deal with a lot of correspondence from the DWP, yeah. Medical letters and correspondence from the clients themselves. So I was popping into the office one day a week just to pick up postal mail.
Yeah. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about your role?
Terence Higgins Trust? My main role, obviously, is on the welfare rights. So what we do, we help any clients with benefit inquiries. We have an advice line which runs Tuesday to Thursday between 1 and 2 p.m. for any inquiries at all. And also, mainly, we help with the completion of disability benefits, which is now it's personal independence payment, PIP, and with work capability, so PIP sickness, which would be the employment support allowance, or now for new claimants, it's universal credit.
Right.
And obviously we deal with subsequent benefit reviews, which could be 2, 3 years, 4 years down the line, right, depending on what the award the claimant was given in the first instance.
Yeah, okay. You used to, when before COVID, there was workshops and stuff, wasn't there, I remember?
Yeah, obviously that's all had to be put on hold. We are working on getting a digital workshop set up to be able to provide that by Zoom or Google.
Is it Microsoft?
Yes, Teams. Microsoft Teams, yes.
So many of them now, isn't
there? Yeah, that's the trouble. Yeah, so we're still working on that. But also now that things are easing with lockdown, we're hoping to start doing workshops, obviously from the Ship Street office, and are also looking into also holding some at Lunch Positive on a Friday in coordination with Gary Partridge and his volunteers there.
Oh, that's good.
So we're working on getting some dates sorted out.
It's really, because it's quite a complicated process, isn't it? And I think if you do, these workshops were very important for people.
Yeah, the workshops is to sort of empower people to understand better what the DWP are looking for in their claims.
Yeah.
And it's also sort of give a better understanding for claimants to know what they've got to look for, what they've got to say, and also the changes in regulations which seem to take place quite regularly on certain benefits. With PIP, they've stayed basically the same. Obviously, universal credit is changing, and obviously, employment support allowance is still available for existing claimants, but for anyone who has a, what they call a change of circumstances, for instance, if you move from London down to Brighton and you were claiming universal credit, sorry, employment support allowance, that would be classed as a change of circumstances. So if you move to Brighton, you would then be expected to make a claim for universal credit.
Right.
And you would lose your entitlement to ESA. And that's still a bit difficult for people.
It's quite scary as well.
Probably. Yeah, it can be, because obviously universal credit is a more online-based format, so you have to have access, regular access to a computer or a smartphone to be able to access your account online. And for certain clients, that's not an easy thing to carry out. So obviously, we can offer help around that.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to say, because it's changed so much since the old days. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Obviously, we have claimants who originally claimed disability living allowance, which was a disability benefit at that time. That obviously is now being superseded by PIP, Personal Independence Payment. We still have a lot of clients still in receipt of DLA. And obviously, the worry is, and they're aware of it, that at some point they're going to get a letter dropping on their doormat saying that your entitlement to DLA is coming to an end. Mm. If you want to make a claim for a disability benefit, you then have to make a new claim for personal independence payment.
Yeah.
And that can be quite a shock, because what they need the claimant to do is to actually call DWP to register their interest in making that claim for PIP. And then this form arrives on their doorstep, and it just gives them 1 month to return it by. And that is always a worrying time for claimants, because you might phone up today, they might send it out, say, on Wednesday, and it might take another 7 days to reach you. So that you've already lost a week of that 1 4-week period to complete the form and get it returned by. And it's often difficult within that 4-week period of getting hold of medical evidence from your GP, from any consultants that are involved with whatever your illness is, or from your HIV consultant at the Lawson unit, or whatever hospital you're attending.
Yeah.
So it does put a lot of anxiousness into the equation.
Yeah, quite a stressed time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Such a limit.
But that's what we can help with. I mean, that's the majority of our work, is helping claimants complete that initial form. It's and obviously, in 2 to 3 or 4 years' time, when that initial award is due to run out, they will get a review form set out to them.
Yeah.
We can obviously assist and help complete that award review form. And obviously, we help and assist and support clients through their original claim straight through to an appeal process. Obviously, after the initial form is sent in, you go through an assessment period. And then there's the DWP decision maker will make an award or not make an award. If it doesn't go in the claimant's favour, we support them through making a mandatory reconsideration, which means we are asking the DWP to re-look at the claim. They then get a DWP decision on that. Again, if it doesn't go in that claimant's favour, we then have the opportunity to raise or request an appeal on HM Courts and Tribunal Service. This is a special SSCS1 form that we have to fill out. We make our claim in a letter as well. We send that into the courts. They register it. They then send our appeal documentation to the DWP to give them another chance to relook at the claim. If the decision then is not to change the original award, the DWP then have to send the court, the claimant, and us as a representative, what they call the paperwork bundle. So it's all the documentation and the claim.
Yeah.
And then at some point, which can take up to 12 months, a tribunal will sit and make a decision. Or a tribunal could sit and adjourn because they might feel that they need to speak to the claimant.
Right.
So that would then come back in a letter to the claimant and to me saying that's what the court's decision is. And then I sit down with that claimant to see how they're feeling and whether they want to appear before a panel.
And that brings up other issues, doesn't it?
Of course it does, yeah. Because the appeal panel consists of three people. There's a judge who's in charge of making sure all the legal elements of a claim have taken place. Mm. There's a medical doctor, and there's also a representative from a disability charity who sits on the panel. And during the course when you attend, all three of those people can ask questions of the claimant. Obviously, we can support claimants through that. I can attend appeals with the claimant. Obviously, most of the questions are directed through to the claimant to understand better the health condition and the disabilities that they and restrictions that puts upon them.
Yeah.
But we can, as their support, intervene and say certain things. But like I said, it's a whole process that is stressful and causes an awful lot of anxiety amongst clients.
But that's why this service is a very important service.
Yeah, I mean, because over the last few years, we've had various advice centres closing down, which is a great shame because there's still a great need for it. Yeah. Obviously, we are supporting people living with HIV through this process. And it's still now, I think, for our claimants, the benefit system is getting a little bit worse in respect of medication is great. It's done an awful good lot of good. We're living longer. We're living more natural lives. But for people who've been living long-term with HIV, there's comorbidities and other illnesses on board. Mm. And when you're going through this process, it's not always easy for the, if you like, the assessment officers within the DWP and their contractors to understand the health situation of people living with long-term HIV. I think they're under this premise, like the media is, we just take one pill and we're living normal lives, and it doesn't work that way. So we do have a fight on our hands sometimes, getting our, if you like, our point and our argument across health-wise. But we are quite successful, which is one good thing. And I would recommend anybody, if they've got any queries or they've got any questions or they're a bit fraught with anxiety about completing the form themselves, even if they want to fill it out themselves, which is great, they can always call us and they can get some advice.
Yeah, which is great. And what's the number, Michael?
The main phone number is 01273 764 200. That would take you through to the reception. So you just ask for me, Michael Brimacombe, or just ask for Michael. They'll know who you are. Or I do have a works mobile, which is 07380 651386.
Brilliant.
Or they can email me, which is michael.brimacombe@tht.org.uk.
Fabulous. And also you take volunteers on, don't you, to help you?
Yeah, I run a service at the moment. I've got three volunteers. Obviously, for the past year, they've not been able to work because obviously they can access records during office hours. But obviously, with the office being closed, they've not been able to work. I'm in the presence of trying to get them re-engaged with the service, but we're always looking out for more volunteers. on this side. So if you think you've got a natural sway to deal with benefits and would like to know more about it, by all means, please get in touch. You can either just drop in and we can have a quick word. But the main way of going through volunteering is having a look at the main THT webpage. There's a section there all about volunteering and how you can go about it.
OK, brilliant. So, thank you so much. That's been really insightful and very informative. And also, I want to thank you for all your support. I'm sure that comes from a lot of our listeners.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Yeah. But I'm here to do a job and I actually enjoy the job I do.
Yeah.
Taking on the DWP is great. I'm winning.
Yes, fantastic. Thanks, Michael.
Bye. Radio Reverb. Fun.
Radio Reverb. Hello to you, Josh, and everyone listening to the HIV Hour. The Sussex Beacon is functioning as normal at the moment, and we have been for some time. So our 10-bed hospital is open for referrals. Have a look at our website to see what we do. And if you feel that you can benefit from that, then talk to your GP or your consultant about making a referral. We also have a range of services for people to come in, see us during the day. For group work, we take up individual cases and work with people on issues that are making life difficult for them. We have a mindfulness sessions, which have been specially designed for people living with HIV, and an exercise program, which is a physio-led program specifically designed for people aging with HIV, who were looking for some gentle exercise. Overall, we're here for you. Whatever you need, if you're a person living with HIV and feeling the challenges of that, then get in touch with us and let us know. There's much more on our website, which is www.sussexbeacon.org.uk.
Marek, I'm one of the health promotion workers at THT. I'm here to let you know that the clinic is open again. Our testing service at the clinic is for men who have sex with men, anyone from the LGBTQ plus community, trans or non-binary, black African community, BME community, male and female sex workers, and for women who have sex with women. So THT, we're offering, we do a rapid HIV and syphilis test. Results are given within 10 minutes. We offer self-taken three-site swab testing for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and we send those to the clinic and you'll get those results within about 10 days. We are open now Monday to Friday between 10:30 and 4:30. We perhaps will be doing evening clinics, but at the moment we're just open Monday to Friday, 10 till 4:30. Ordinarily we were a walk-in clinic, but given the situation at the moment, we are currently open by appointment only. So if you ring 01273 764200, we can book you in an appointment. We will ask you some relevant COVID-related questions and you will be asked to be wearing your mask throughout the whole consultation.
So, amazing show.
Mm-hmm.
Another one in the bag.
And Josh, can I just sort of mention something quickly to our listeners? If you're not aware, this week is Mental Health Awareness Week. So please access any services, there's lots of stuff going on in Brighton, as always. You know, if you're struggling, especially at this time coming out from COVID and what have you, there's lots of resources, lots of things going on. So please do not suffer in silence. So I just wanted to sort of finish off that because that's really quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. See you next week.